Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I have Sean in studio. This is a show about what matters most in our life, our minds, our thoughts, our feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. I will be sharing an interview that I have done with Dr. Michael Yapko. He's my teacher, he's a psychotherapist and an author of more than 15 books and lectures in more than 30 countries. And then I will be speaking with Paul Krause, a psychotherapist and the clinical director of Health for Life Grand Rapids and a podcast host. His podcast name is The Intentional Clinician, and you can find it everywhere. So let me share with you some of my thoughts about this week. I know that it takes a lot of patience, faith, and grace to live in such an uncertain time. Uncertainty has been at the core of many of my conversations with friends, colleagues, and clients. What will happen next? When can we go back to our normal life? What would be the new normal? Should I get a divorce? Should I stay? Should I just work from home for now? Or after even it's done, can I just work from home? Can I ever hug my friends again? Will I find a job soon? What will happen to the economy of the world? What should I do when others are not respecting the social distancing? Will I get infected if I go to walk? Should I wash everything from the grocery store? And so many more questions that I'm sure you probably have yourself or heard. Living in this state of what would happen, or what if, the worst disaster, keeps everyone on the edge of anxiety and panic. What has been very clear is that we have always lived in a state of uncertainty. We have systematically sent either a favorable version of the past to the uncertain future, or created an upgraded and a more favorable than what happened in the past to our future to guide us toward motivation and action. Many times, we create a vision of the future. For example, that tomorrow will be like today. I'll have the same job, the same hope, the same mate, or even an upgraded version, like I'll have a better job, more money, secure retirement, etc. You know, you could upgrade it any way you like, and then you kind of like forecast it in the future. Suddenly tomorrow comes, and without you doing anything different, life changes. You get laid off, you have to stay home and not socialize, find out that your mate is no longer interested in you, you can't pay your mortgage, and on, things that you really did not predict, and they show up. Usually if you didn't predict them and they show up and they're positive, you'll be joyous, you'll have a little bit of an anxiety, but joyous, and you'll be like, great, I deserve it. And if it's not something you expected and it's not favorable and you really, really don't want to have it, then, you know, you'll have your own set of experiences. As long as we constantly realize that we are the one that are projecting these scenarios to the future and that it's a reality that is awaiting us or that are promised to us, we can move with grace toward a new way of living. The minute that we get attached or stuck to our projection and hold those projections as if that is the way that it should be, or that the world owes me for it to be that way, the scenario I made up, then we lose a perspective on reality and get lost in our own victimhood based on the novel that we wrote in our own head and thought it was reality. As soon as we realize what's real, our anxiety lessens, and we can rely on our strength and resiliency, character to move through life as is. Go through life as is, with all the beauty, all the ups and downs. And this does not mean that you will not have any emotions to deal with. Of course you're going to have emotions, you're a human being. But actually then emotions are your bodily reaction to reality, not a reaction to the delusional thinking that we went through the process of. And seeing the reality of what is allows us to deal with what is and with no need for certainty, because we know what strengths we already have. It's already innate in us. We got it through experience. Another emotion that has been experienced by many around me, including myself, is a sense of grief, of mourning, a sense of loss of who we know ourselves to be, our role in our career as a social person, as a family member, as a wife or a husband or a parent, as a member of the community. Who am I now? And who will I be after all of this? Anxiety and grief are normal feelings to experience for the reality of our time. Feel the emotions in your body, honor yourself, release it, and recreate yourself within what is. And I'm positive we will all get through what is, and a new reality will be waiting for all of us. And I'm positive as we, who we are, and with our strength, with the resiliency, with what we have, we're going to pull through this and many, many more. And so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Dr. Michael Yapko.
Check us out online at KMET1490AM.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and welcome back to the Inner Voice Show. I am very excited to be with my teacher, someone that I've learned so much from, Dr. Michael Yapko. He's a clinical psychologist and a marriage and family therapist and the author of 15 books, including his latest book, Keys to Unlocking Depression. Thank you for coming to my show again, Dr. Yapko.
Happy to do it, Fujian. Thanks so much.
So we've all been cooped up for a couple of weeks. And I've had the range of emotions going from completely denial and, you know, minimizing it, like, what's up? It's just a flu. What's the big deal? To fear, to sadness. I woke up this morning with like ample amount of agitation, which I just couldn't figure out what it was. But I know that I am very emotional from one extreme to the other, watching the news, knowing the numbers are going up and people are dying, to talking to people, my clients who are suffering from the anxiety of not losing their jobs and what to do in the, you know, in the, their marriages and what's going to happen to them, to other people who haven't really changed as far as the concept of finances or what's happening with them, but the loneliness and you know, the isolation, the kind of like feeling like they're not really doing anything. So it's a lot of emotions everywhere. So please help.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of different factors, of course, that determine how people are going to do during this kind of thing. Yeah, there's no precedent for it. What we do have, though, is a great deal of clinical and research data about how people handle stress. It's new to this circumstance. But we've learned a lot about who is more likely to have emotional difficulties, who's less likely to have emotional difficulties, and more important, what are the skills that people can learn in order to better regulate themselves. So if you don't mind, I'll just kind of talk for a couple minutes about some of what I think are the more important things for people to think about. The first and biggest problem for most people is the uncertainty of what's happening. You know, this is what clinicians call ambiguity, what almost anybody would call ambiguity. We don't know. We don't know how long this is going to go on for. We don't know how and when the economy is going to recover. We don't know how it's going to affect people's long-term health. We don't know how it's going to change the dynamics of our society. We don't know how it's going to change work environments and work priorities. We don't know. And any time that you don't know, it invites analysis, it invites projections. One of the things that we do know is there's a big difference between the way that people who are more vulnerable to anxiety and depression handle ambiguity compared to the people who are less vulnerable. The people who are less vulnerable recognize here is a situation that nobody can answer. Nobody can provide an answer to it. No amount of analysis is going to yield an answer. So they don't look for answers. They don't make answers up that scare them. And exactly what you said when you were talking about, you know, people asking, what if, what's going to happen to my job? What's going to happen to the economy? And it invites a coping style called rumination. Rumination means spinning the same thoughts around over and over and over again, watching all the news, watching all the press conferences, desperately searching for something that will give you some level of certainty. And of course, the more you watch the news, the worse you're going to feel. The more you talk with people about how bad things are, the worse you're going to feel. The more that you immerse yourself in all the fears, all the what-if questions, the worse you're going to feel. So what the best advice I can give people now is recognize the uncertainty, accept it for now. It's not always going to be this way. But for now, the most important questions you want answered, you being any viewer out there, are questions that nobody can answer. We don't know how this is going to end. It's the equivalent of somebody asking, so what happens after you die? Or somebody asking, so is reincarnation real? Or asking, is there really a God? These are questions that no amount of analysis is going to yield an answer to. And so if you search for an answer and search for an answer, guaranteed, it will raise your anxiety level, raise your depression level. You're not doing yourself a favor. So my advice is to move to a short-term coping. It's about getting through each day. It's not about the big plan of what's going to happen 6 months from now. It's about getting through today in the best way that you can. How can you get connected and stay connected to people using Zoom, using Skype, using other video platforms? What we've been doing is we've been having Skype dinners with friends. We put our laptop on the dinner table. They put their laptop on the dinner table. And we have a meal together. It's not exactly normal, but it's almost normal. And it really provides a great way to stay connected. It's not just a quick phone call. It's sharing a meal together and laughing and cracking jokes and having a little bit of normalcy, the importance of staying connected. But now's a real good time to do the physical care, making sure you're exercising, making sure you're eating well, making sure you're sleeping. And, you know, having these skills to manage the anxiety, self-soothing. One of the things I want to offer people is for the last 2 years, I've been co-developing an app, a smartphone app, and it's finally ready. And we announced its launch last week. It's called Mindset. Mindset. And people can go to my website, yapko.com, yapko.com, click on the Mindset box. We're offering it free for the month of April to help people. So there are dozens of hypnosis sessions, most of which I've contributed, but some other people as well, to help people sleep, to help people reduce their anxiety, to help people better tolerate the ambiguity of these kinds of life situations, to help people reduce their fears and levels of depression. And so, you know, long story short, there are a lot of things people can do to cope, and that's really what it's about. And to really keep yourself from asking the big long-term questions of what does it all mean and where is it all going, when nobody can answer those kinds of questions right now.
When we look at the concept of the short-term coping mechanism, it seems like it becomes for us to live really a lot more in here and now, because we're not necessarily planning for the future because we have no idea what the future would look like. So planning when the path of the future has no similarity at this point to the path of the past, because we can project and say, okay, we're going to go back to what normal was for any of us. And yet we have no idea if normal will ever be that type of a normal again.
Exactly.
Maybe our socialization will be, you know, somewhat normal, but would the businesses be, would the city and the country be the same way? Will the financial aspects of what we thought about would be the same way? So it really forces us in a way to come back to the present moment and be with the present moment. Now, I know that...
Let me just make one comment about that. It depends what you're doing in the present moment, whether it's going to help you or not. You know, for people who are ruminating in the present moment, scaring the heck out of themselves, being in the moment, not so great. Being in the moment, doing things that bring you pleasure or reduce your anxiety or give you a sense of meaningfulness, that you're doing more to help your child do their schoolwork online, or you're having better connection time with your spouse, or you're learning something new, or you're using the moment. It's not just being in the moment, it's how you use the moment. That really matters. Sorry to interrupt, go ahead.
No, thank you. That's what I was gonna ask. So thank you for responding into that way. There's also this concept of being in the moment, which is different, I think, for a lot of people. So it's how to teach them how to use the moment, because most of us have been used to living in the future or in the past. And they do meditation, they do different versions of things in order to live in the moment. But almost every single thing that many people do in the moment, it has to do with some plan in the future. Like they look at the vision in the future and they base their behavior at this point toward that. If we look at, we don't know, the ambiguous concept of the future, how would people use this moment in order not only enjoy, but where you use the word use the moment, which is not necessarily based on a particular future?
Yeah. You know, what you focus on, this is the, you know, as you know from the course, the first lesson you learn is what you focus on, you amplify. So now the question is, what part of our experience do we want to focus on and amplify? So doing something as simple as a gratitude journal, one of the most widely used psychological tools, you know, every therapist on the planet encourages their clients to do a gratitude journal, and with good reason. You know, this is one of those empirically validated interventions that has a long-term impact. And it's a really important thing that even in the midst of a pandemic, what are the things that are right? You know, the fact that you have a home, the fact that you have a kid that you love, or the fact that you can watch the sunset from your window, or the fact that you can pick up the phone and talk to somebody who really loves you. You know, those are the things in the moment that remind you it isn't all bad. Yeah, there are some tough things to deal with out there, but it isn't everything. And it's finding those smaller elements of experience to be able to focus on them, to remind yourself, I have friends, I have health right now, I have the ability to do self-soothing things like meditation or self-hypnosis, I have the ability to, you know, go to the refrigerator and grab something to eat. You know, something as simple as that, you know, comfort food, and, you know, we don't want people gaining 20 pounds during the pandemic, but, you know, the fact that you have these little bits of everyday life that have not just normalcy attached to them, but things that are really positive about them, you know, that's a really valuable thing.
You talk about the couples and the families being cooped up in a position that kids are home and parents are at home and they don't have a lot of time away from each other. And this is causing a major amount of anger and frustration and getting each other's nerves. And they have no idea how to cope with this scenario, not knowing again how long this scenario is going to go on. What would you suggest to the couples who are going through this? Especially, I've been witnessing a lot of people who are going through the emotional aspect of it due to the financial hardship. So their anxiety turns into agitation and anger. And then it goes into blame. For example, why didn't I do this? So it goes, takes them to the past. Why didn't I do this? Why didn't I save? Why da 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 da? And then blaming each other. What would be some of your suggestions to the couples who are going through this?
Well, you know, we've been talking about the phrase social distancing in the media constantly, of keeping your distance from people. And, you know, we in the therapy biz are always talking about how important connection is and how important it is to have that. But it's also important to have distance in your closest relationships. It's also important to have some distance, to have some space for yourself, to be able to close a door and have some room. And to be able to catch yourself in the middle of blaming somebody, and to be able to own it and apologize and back away, to be able to say, I don't mean to do that. You know, the old phrase, hindsight's 20/20. Of, you know, I mean, how many people all across America wish they had stacked up on toilet paper and paper towels? You know, that you know, hindsight's 20/20. And so to get into a blame now where you really couldn't predict what direction this was going to take or how bad it was going to get. You know, even the people who were our leaders, you know, didn't do a very good job of predicting where this was going to go. And so, you know, now's the time for people to be extra aware of keeping a cool head, being polite and being kind, and appreciating this is something that we are going to face together. It's not about you versus me. It's about us versus the problem. And talking about it more and talking about it more is just out loud rumination. It's still not going to solve anything. To be able to say there's nothing that we can do in the next 5 minutes that's going to make this problem go away. And it isn't until we have more information, more time has passed, and more dust has settled that we'll see where we are. Now's not the time to get into it. Now, that requires another skill set. It's called compartmentalization, the ability to set something aside and leave it there and not keep bringing it up and not keep bringing it up, to set aside frustration, to set aside the anger, and just keep that phrase in mind, what you focus on, you amplify. But when people think that by talking about it more, that means they're problem solving, that by analyzing it more, that means they're problem solving, that's the mistake that they're making. And you know, this is one of the things that we've learned from studying rumination, that ruminators think that the more they analyze it, the more that they're doing something positive to solve the problem, but it doesn't work that way. You can't solve a problem that is currently unsolvable. You can't solve a problem for which you don't have all the necessary information. And the information is still unfolding one day at a time, and it will be for many weeks, perhaps months to come. So it really takes a cooler head to say, now's not the time. This isn't something we can deal with right now.
Definitely. Last 1 minute, anything particular that comes to your mind that you want to share with our audience that I haven't really asked?
Well, I think that, you know, one of the pieces of advice that you hear therapists give people routinely is, you know, you have to do what's in your control and you know what's in your control and know what isn't in your control. And the problem, of course, is people aren't very good at that. You know, you look at what I've been talking about, rumination, that's an attempt to control the uncontrollable. And so this is something for people to really give some thought to. How do you know what is controllable and what isn't? Wanting it to be controllable doesn't make it so. Wishing it was controllable doesn't make it so. And so it really would help to make it concrete, make a list for yourself, literally, of what are the things that are in your control. You know, you can control whether you exercise. You can control whether you visit the Mindset app and use it. You can control whether you read. You can control whether you manage your frustration and anger in more constructive ways. You can't control the pace at which this epidemic or pandemic gets dealt with. You can't control other people's reactions. What are the things that you can control, and to do as many of those as you possibly can each day, and being clear, here's the line that divides what I can do from what I can't do, so that you're not getting more frustrated and more angry and more depressed and more anxious, you know, through idealistic wishes for things that just can't happen, at least not right now. I hope those are useful ideas to people.
Absolutely. And for people to go to yapko.com, YAPKO.com, and also look for Mindset app. Can they also find it in iTunes or Stitcher and stuff yet, or do they have to go to your website?
I think if they go to the App Store, they'll find it on iPhones. Now, it isn't available on Android yet, but it will be later this year.
Okay, beautiful. All right, so Mindset app, everyone. Go find it and go to yapko.com. Also, that's how you can find it. Thank you so much, Dr. Yapko. It's always a pleasure to see you, and hope to have you on the show whenever that you have a chance. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Take care.
Take care. And for everyone who's with us, please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you afraid? Are you getting panic attacks? Are you getting bored and can't stand it anymore at your home? Are you finding yourself in a bind with a relationship at home? Are you wondering what all of the fuss is? And are you determined to guard yourself against all others? Or worried about how am I going to pay my rent or mortgage? In respect to the coronavirus stress, I'm offering a sliding scale online psychotherapy for anyone in California and life coaching to anyone in the world who's suffering financially. Please connect with me at Foujan.com, Foujan.com.
Well, hello and welcome back again to the Inner Voice Show. I am with Paul Krause, is the Clinical Director of Health for Life Grand Rapids, HOMA, the Trauma-Informed Counseling Center of Grand Rapids in Michigan. He is the host of the International Clinician Podcast, which I've been there. He has asked me to be there, which covers psychology and philosophy. Paul is the creator of the National Violence Prevention Hotline, as well as the Intentional Clinician Training Program for counselors. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Thanks for having me on, Foujan. It's very great to be here on the show, and I'm excited to talk with you today.
Absolutely. You know, I know that you work a lot with trauma, and I am a belief that almost every single human being on the face of the earth has had gone through some sort of trauma, but we all have a different explanation about what we think trauma is. Could you please share with us what your thoughts are and your experience with all these years that you've worked with trauma?
Yes, I think it takes a while to really understand fully what we mean when we say trauma. So I have kind of combined a lot of definitions into one, and this is sort of my working definition that's ever changing, which is, it's a nervous system experience that affects us on a basic biological level. That's the first part. The second part is that basic biological level then usually inspires us to tell some type of internal or external or both story or narrative about it. And this affects us in many ways. So the underlying paradigm, and why I think understanding trauma or being trauma informed is so important to all medical treatments, including therapy, counseling, and doctors, but also in the culture is important, is because it's recognizing that our body and our nervous system want to stay alive, and they want to sustain life. And in many ways, so do, you know, we're very similar to other mammals. When something comes at us, like if I was a bunny and a tiger is coming after me, I'm going to get scared and probably run. I'm definitely not going to fight it, but I might freeze in place like some bunnies do, fight, flight, freeze. And that's kind of our nervous system's natural defense against threats. And as humans, we have complicated minds, and we can talk a lot and have a lot of narratives. And so when a trauma happens to a person, it's a nervous system response that they may not recognize that it's they're having, but then it can affect them. For instance, an easy one would be a nervous system response. So I was, let's just say I was in a car accident and a red car happened to hit my driver's side door. I may not know it, but I may have a nervous system biological baseline response to every time I see a red car. I start to have maybe some strange feelings. Maybe I get nervous. Maybe I get angry. And so that's a biological thing. And I might make up a story about that. I may not realize that's from a trauma. That's kind of straightforward. But there's so many ways that it can affect us. And if not understood, I think people make up a lot of stories about what the world is like, or what's wrong with them, or what's wrong with people, or what's, and so it really can impact us if we don't fully understand what trauma is in our nervous system at the baseline and how that affects our psychology and biology. It affects our story of how the, what kind of place we live in, what kind of person we are, what kind of relationships we have with animals and people, and it can really hurt people. And then it can be, I think, is the baseline, untreated trauma, I think, is the baseline of a lot of reasons why people develop major depression, generalized anxiety, obsessive compulsive disorder. Obviously, post-traumatic stress disorder is the one we're talking about. Attachment trauma, relationship difficulties, it because of a multi-tiered process. And I'm not a scientist, but I've read a lot of Dr. Dan Siegel out of UCLA. I've read just a lot of people that write about this, Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, and learning about that has helped me understand. It's a very complicated thing, but on the baseline, it's a nervous system reaction that happens when things happen to us in our environment.
And it seems more and more as you're talking, how much it is important for everybody to look at what it is that they might have as a trauma and work on it. Because every part of our system kind of wants to avoid it and wants never to go back there. And, you know, as it creeps up and shows itself, we want to keep pushing it back and moving on with life. But there is a point in going back and healing that trauma. And some people might have, because they have had the resiliency of going past through a trauma, they might not even call it a trauma because they've survived it. Some issues happen and, you know, you know that this was traumatic. A lot of things happen to us where maybe because it was all over our family, maybe it was because it was a norm of that part of the society or the time. For example, people who live in countries who war is part of everyday life, they don't even consider it a trauma anymore. Right now, we're going through the coronavirus. Many people are traumatized in many levels, but they don't even consider it. But the important fact is that if they don't take care of it, like you said, it will be an issue that would be underlying a lot of other major issues. And you gave a beautiful list, and I just wanted to add to your list the concept of addiction. Most of the people who, you know, end up being an addict, we could find that underneath that there was some trauma that had not been healed in so many ways. There are different traumas, for example, of childhood wounds that maybe a person was physically abused, sexually abused. They were in some sort of poverty. They were bullied. There were so many layers that something might have happened in childhood and the person has survived it. There are other traumas which are ongoing, such as domestic violence or some of the abuse, or like what I said, you're living in a country that is constantly, for example, war is part of it. These are ongoing trauma. And then there are episodic traumas, like you would be in a car accident, or you were in a location when, you know, there's a fire or something that is one episode that has happened in your life and then it's no longer there. Can you please tell us about the form of treatments, and then what do you consider the treatment being similar or different in these types of different traumas?
Well, there are a lot of treatments. And one thing I wanted to touch on right before I went into there was you said a lot of people would like to avoid it or never talk about it again. And I think that I just want to validate that that's completely normal. And in fact, avoidance is one of the major symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. And I think a lot of people don't recognize that they have trauma because of the story they tell themselves, but it is deeply impacting your nervous system, which is why the word trauma sometimes is culturally confusing to certain people from certain cultures. And so that's why I think we do need a better word for it, but that's the best word for it. We got it right now. And if people want to look into the science, you should check out the Adverse Child Experiences study to understand why we know this. That's part of the study that we know. So let's talk about the different types of treatment. One of the most popular types of treatment, and I believe one of the most best studied forms of treatment, is eye movement desensitization reprocessing, also known as EMDR therapy, which involves both talk therapy and it involves some bilateral stimulation. You can read about it. I'm not going to go into all that. And that type of therapy can be done in person or online, and it is highly involved. But yet highly effective. And even a short amount of time, there's a study that I wrote in my trauma-informed counseling center of Grand Rapids document that I put out there for free. There were studies I was quoting where people who had PTSD diagnosis from war only went through 7 to 12 sessions, and they did no longer have the PTSD diagnosis. Now, they still probably had anxiety or depression. Was there, but they weren't having those severe reactions. So what EMDR aims to do is it aims to bring down the subjective experience of distress that people feel. And the subjective experience of stress that people feel is in the body and in the mind. And so whatever that is for you, we don't know. We just know that in the reports that we have seen through science, that people feel after going through the phases of EMDR, they won't respond with the high level of stress or depression or anxiety trigger that they used to respond to. So that's the positive side. That one, I believe, works quite well with episodic trauma, meaning like I was in a car accident, something happened to me, something bad, and we go over the incident many times until the person can basically... And it sounds scary, but it's really not. Until the person can integrate the experience from the past in the correct way into their current narrative and their story, and also feel differently about it, so it actually doesn't feel like it's reoccurring to them, which is one of the symptoms of having a trauma response, is that you feel that things are almost like still happening right now. EMDR is one of them. There's also somatic experiencing therapy. There is brain spotting, which is a new one that's coming out that's being studied right now. There is trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy. People have also used acceptance and commitment therapy as well to treat trauma in the short term. There's many different things that can be done for it, but we are kind of focusing on the ones that are specified for trauma. You can also use trauma EMDR therapy on childhood traumas. Absolutely. It just seems to usually be a bit more of a longer term process instead of the short term therapy, because with childhood attachment wounds, we're dealing with patterns of behavior where the child felt unsafe or devalued or powerless, and all of these things started creeping into their narrative as they grew up. And as it crept into their narrative, then that caused all sorts of other problems, possibly other traumas, possibly depression, anxiety, low self-esteem, all the things you can see in the ACEs study. And so therefore, there's a lot of undoing that needs to be done. So EMDR needs to be combined with other therapies in that sense, and needs to be measured. And we have to teach the people who are in that, they usually are missing something. that they didn't get as a child, that we have to teach them those skills, whatever that could be, such as positive self-talk, sometimes just organization, sometimes, anyway, just basic ways of thinking about themselves in the world. And I know that you have a whole model that you've developed that kind of combines EMDR with other types of therapy as well. And I believe that'll be in your notes. Go ahead. Do you want to say something about that?
Yes. The part of what I also had seen is I've worked so long with EMDR, and I call it a magical technique. I've worked with hypnosis for many, many years. And then, you know, obviously cognitive behavioral therapy and all of it. And it seemed like each one of them really took care of one aspect. And the awareness integration model, I brought a lot of these different aspects and brought them together. So they kind of like fulfilled what the other one was missing and put them in a structure that could really handle trauma. My experience has also been that when you have a childhood trauma, I think that you gain a lot of strength on how to handle life in some aspect, but there's an area that is always segregated and put to the side. And that's why a part of us will always stay vulnerable. And it's important to do those types of trauma work where the vulnerable side of us kind of integrates with that strength and comes in together. But I think the episodic ones, EMDR is beautiful because even when, you know, people went through, I personally went through the earthquake in California, and you could really, my physiology could really tell me that it didn't matter what I said to my brain. My physiology was consistently for over a year, I was going through, reactions. And that's where the EMDR works a lot with the bilateral, stimulation really changes the physiology of a person so quick that it's like, you know, you really don't need to suffer so long as all of them, I did for about a year at that time. It was really unnecessary to suffer that long. And that's why I call it a magical concept, or for people who have accidents. It's just unnecessary to do that. So we have an amazing, techniques that it could really support people. And I know that this is also what you do in your clinic with your other therapists, right?
Absolutely. So in my clinic, what we've done is essentially I recognize that when I move from Arizona to Michigan, I'm still in Arizona for part of the year. But when I moved to Michigan, I noticed that there weren't as many trauma-informed counseling places and or EMDR therapist as there were in Arizona. So basically, I worked with everyone in that I wanted to bring into the practice or that were coming into the practice to get extra training, to at least go to trauma-informed counseling trainings. There's a lot of those. And then my idea would be to get these specific trauma-informed techniques, such as EMDR and somatic experiencing therapy. So almost everyone at our clinic is either EMDR certified and trained, or they're on their way to be. We have a somatic experiencing practitioner who's certified. So I wanted to create a place where people could come and get that type of specialized therapy. So everyone is, like yourself, trained in CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and other basic talk therapies, but we wanted to kind of do that. And we've seen amazing results. There's been a lot of need for it. I think when we finally showed up, we've been getting a lot of calls and inquiries where some people were like, oh my goodness, I'm so glad you're here. But other people said, I didn't even know what trauma was. And I didn't even know that's what I had. And I had been going to, different therapies and trying different things for a long time. And when I said, how do I deal with this, let's just say sexual abuse trauma, some people's advice was to just try not to think about it, or to try to think about all the positive things you have in your life. And that didn't really work, obviously, for that person. And I would not say that that's a part of trauma therapy. I don't think that works either. I think we have to bring these dark things out in a safe place, in a safe environment, with the right therapist relationship, but also the right techniques and the right science to be able to blend those together to help a person actually feel different. And that's, I think, the important part about trauma-informed therapies, are that you shouldn't just think differently, because anyone can do that. there are so many people in the world who are untreated from trauma, and they have thought differently. They're resilient. They're strong people. They have fought. They've done what they've needed to do. But like you said, there's a part of them that may not be integrated, and they have a weakness, or they, like for instance, I had grandfathers who went through the war, World War II. And one of them had lost brothers in the war. And so anytime you brought up the war, he would be in a bad mood for the rest of the day and snap at people. And isn't that just, you know, okay, well, of course, no one wants to talk about war, but well, he had a personal trauma. He lost two brothers in the war. And not to mention being in it. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, essentially, we do need to bring out this sort of thing so we can integrate it, so we can, because trauma affects people in so many different ways, so that we become stronger. So we take the strong, resilient part, but if we learn the skills or be able to deal with something really difficult for ourselves, it's no longer physically and mentally burdening us. And we become stronger and more integrated as a result. And so that is exactly with your awareness integration model, like every trauma therapy is just the beginning. This is the beginning. I mean, this started with Francine Shapiro in the 90s, and people have been all trying to look into it. We're still in the beginning of this, but we know what works. And we know that sometimes just talking about it doesn't work. So that's why we bring in these other techniques and these other types of therapies. And education is key. Also, learning a lot about it helps you have empathy for yourself and others. It can change how you feel internally, but also how you feel about the world and how you're able to perform and function. There's so many people that are limited in their functioning who have, they've overcome great traumas, but they haven't had any therapy or done any integration work. Even, you know, you can do programs online or read books. There's all sorts of things you can do, but they haven't done any. And then it's actually possibly impacting their functioning negatively, and they may not be aware of that.
Absolutely. Paul, you also have a podcast. Can you share a little bit about what brought you to create a podcast and who are your audience, and what could they, as they check in your podcast, what is it that they would find?
Oh, yes. So my podcast is called The Intentional Clinician Podcast. And I'll read you the description that I wrote, because I thought I just revised it based on your podcast today. But I wrote, entertaining and informative talks covering psychology and philosophy with a variety of guests, including yourself, which you can hear on an episode. I said, discussing both practical and eccentric approaches on living a full and vibrant life, including bold, unedited discussions on the meaning of life, history, music, and culture. Paul Krause, that's me, your host, draws on his unique experience of growing up in a small motel in the countryside, living in large cities, and working with and living among diverse cultural and socioeconomic groups. He combines his trauma-informed, science-based perspective with the contrasting desire to live like a mystic. Opposites unite on this podcast. So this podcast is definitely, I'm a person who loves life. I love people. I've been through a lot of trauma myself, but I worked through that, and I've gone through more trauma, and I've had to work through that. And so I still like life, and I still like people, even though sometimes I get upset by things that happen in the world and things that happen to me. So I'm bringing myself, and I'm bringing in guests. So some of these are just me talking and playing some music, because I love music and I love culture. But essentially, it's I found that my audience is mixed. It's about half clinicians. So I talk a lot about things you can do with your clients and trauma. I talk about a lot about that. I talk about different types of psychology. But then I just started getting into philosophy. So I just interviewed Mark Nepo, who's a poet, about philosophy, and Kent Dobson, who's a philosopher, and some other people. I introduced yourself on your model. We talked a lot of shop about how to help people. But what I've also been finding is I've been getting a lot of emails from just people that are interested in learning, just average people that don't have psychology degrees. So I think this podcast is for anyone. That's my long-winded description, even though it's called The Intentional Clinician. And I just have a lot of fun with it. It's free. I love doing it. I do it at least once a month. I put out an episode, and it's just fun for me. And I love to put out free information, because I really want to help people. And when I was a kid, I was growing up in, I was near a university. Thank God. I was 8 minutes from a major university that was state funded. So I got a lot of great cultural influence from that. But if it wasn't for that, my God, if I was living out, you know, I was in the countryside, 8 minutes outside a big city, I'm really worried about what could have happened to me. And they didn't have podcasts when I was a kid. But I had I had the public radio, and I had the Michigan State University's student radio station. So I got a lot of exposure to interesting ideas and people that helped me develop as a person. So I wanted to put this podcast out there for people all over the world, wherever they are, if they're a little bit isolated from maybe some positive influences or some interesting psychology, philosophy, music, to get interested in something. That's my goal, because as a kid, I think I struggled, and I can't imagine what would have happened if I hadn't had those resources that I had on the radio. So
in 1 minute, okay, what is your best offering? I won't call it advice, because nobody wants to hear advice.
Okay.
What is your best offering as a gift to people who are listening to us about how maybe they're getting traumatized through the coronavirus epidemic time?
Well, that's a tough one. So I would just say this. I think our brains and our bodies and our lives and our bank accounts and our family members all want answers. We all want to know we're going to be okay. We all want to know we're going to survive. We all wish we had clarity. And so anxiety and depression and all of these feelings and emotions are coming up. And I guess my piece of advice is, if you're out there, hang on. Connect with as many people as you can through Zoom or the internet or the phone or whatever. If you have to yell across your fence to somebody, do what you can, because whatever we're going through right now is temporary. And everyone in the world right now is suffering because of this in some way or another, whether they've lost somebody or whether they've lost a job. And therefore, what I'm saying is, we don't know how this is all going to shake out. No one does. If they tell you they know, run away and just hang in there, because something will emerge from this. Maybe a year from now, maybe a couple years from now, that you'll have lived through this difficult, dark time in our world. So if you're out there, hang on, be patient. And for if you're a person who doesn't know what to do or doesn't have somebody to talk to, pick up a pen, write in a journal, write anything you're feeling. And I would say tune into some cool podcasts like Fujian's podcast, very positive stuff. They're free. They're on the internet. If you can get an internet connection, hopefully, that would be great.
Thank you. And I know that afterward, there's a lot of trauma for the physicians, for the nurses, for people who are working at the hospitals, for people who lost their jobs and, they're suffering. And, there are many people who've never had to go through a food bank chain, and this is the first time they're ever experiencing a different way of living that they've never had. So there's going to be a lot of trauma. There's going to be a lot of depression, anxiety. So please, get help in any way, whether you can get help now, or that you can get help right after. However, just remember, you need to get help. Go ahead.
Yes, absolutely. Reach out to wherever help is available. But good news that I've been hearing is that most states are now allowing people onto Medicaid, which is the free. And in Michigan and Arizona, they're allowing telehealth to be 100% covered. Also in Michigan and multiple other states, Blue Cross and Blue Care Network just said that it doesn't matter what your deductible is, it doesn't matter what your copay, if you're doing telehealth for the next 3 months, it's 100% free. So call up your local counselor, whatever state you're in, and find out how they could help you over the internet, whether it's a sliding scale or if you can get on any type of insurance, because right now a lot of insurance is helping out short-term to be free. And if you don't have access to that, talk to your neighbors that are friendly.
Exactly. I know I've put out a sign that, I'm due sliding scale no matter what. It's just, to be there for people. And you said it. Paul, how could people find you?
People can find me. Probably the fastest way is to type in the Trauma-Informed Counseling Center of Grand Rapids, and that'll pop up, and that's got links to me. Or type in the Intentional Clinician Podcast, and that's got links to me. Feel free to send me an email if you've got questions, trying to access resources. I'm also doing sliding scale. I'm trying to find ways for everyone in our clinic to see as many people as possible for as cheap as possible, especially or free if we can, because of this pandemic. So I appreciate you're doing that, Fujian. We're trying to do the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, again, we're all here together. We're going to pass through this together. And all we could do is to help each other passing through this phase. So thank you so much for spending the time. I know, working in two states and everything that's happening and, being a director of a with all of your clinicians and doing all you do, and you started a national violence prevention hotline.
Oh yes.
Hats off to you. You're doing, there's a lot of tasks that you're doing, and you're doing them well. So everyone go to the Intentional Clinician Podcast. It's on iTunes, all of them, Stitcher.
All of them.
All of them that you can find. It was great to be on your show. It was great to have you on my show, and hopefully, we'll continue with our work together in so many different ways. And for all of you who are out there, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you, even through this time. Bye-bye.